This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is AmTower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark AmTower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. AmTower Off-Center with your host, Mark AmTower.
Welcome to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today has been here before, but it's been a while. John Jantz is the founder of Duct Tape Marketing, the author of four books, the latest of which is Duct Tape Selling. John, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. It has been about 5 years, I think.
It's been too long, so let's make up for some lost time here. Let's start by giving people a little bit of background on you, please.
Sure. Well, I got out of college, went to work for an ad agency, did that for about 5 years, and decided that really any dummy could run a business. And so I've owned my own small business marketing consulting firm for over 25 years now. About 10, 12 years ago, I made a pretty major shift. I had really gone after any work I could get, big, small, in between. And I found that I really enjoyed working mostly with small business owners, but they were, in some ways, rather frustrating to work with because they had the same problems sometimes as much larger organizations, but not the same budgets or resources or even attention spans. And so I decided that what I needed to do to really solve my own greatest frustration was to create a systematic approach to marketing, almost a product-like approach, where I could walk in and say, here's what I'm going to do, here's what you're going to do, here are the results we hope we can expect, and by the way, here is what it's going to cost to have me do that. And it was immediately embraced, and as it turns out, I was attempting to solve my greatest frustration, and I think I tapped into one of the greatest frustrations a lot of small business owners have, and that is really even buying marketing consulting services. They were typically piecing it together with the idea of the week or a freelance person here, a freelance person there, and so somebody that came in and talked about a systematic approach to marketing, installing such an approach, I think was very refreshing. And so that really allowed me to build my own practice, but also allowed me to take my methodology to now a network of independent marketing consultants around the world who now license and install the Duct Tape Marketing System.
Cool. So, and before we go further, John's site, and he can be found and reached through Duct, D-U-C-T, ducttapemarketing.com. So, and you can find him on Twitter, LinkedIn, et cetera. I do a lot of consulting with small businesses too. And this exact same problem, my market's the, business to government market, but everybody wants piecemeal. Nobody wants a system installed. And if you do well with the project basis, the client can stay with you forever. But
that's
if
right.
They're paying attention, they can start to replicate what you do.
That's right.
So anyway, we're going to be talking today about the latest book, Duct Tape Selling, Think Like a Marketer, Sell Like a Superstar. And John, I have your book fairly well tabbed already and highlighted. I enjoyed it a lot. We're going to take this sequentially. So, you start with a little vignette about, Joshua Bell being in, it was here in DC in the subway.
Yeah.
He was, the next evening he was going to play at the Kennedy Center, but for scientific purposes, they put him in a subway station. Take it from there, please.
Well, of course, Joshua Bell, virtuoso violinist, playing not only at the Kennedy Center, but sold out, very expensive show. And so he went ahead and took that same Stradivarius $1 million violin and just set up like a standard subway or street musician and played some extremely complex music on that. And the passersby going off to work, rushing through the subway, really in that context, just saw him as a common musician, and really nobody stopped or paid any attention, maybe collected a few dollars in the case. But in that context, his genius was really not seen. And the reason I start with that story is because I believe that really throughout this book, that's what I'm asking salespeople to do. Unfortunately, in many instances, the context of a salesperson is that of a pest, or that of somebody showing up to sell me something or close me or get me to influence me in a way to do something I don't really want to do. And I think that obviously is very detrimental to that salesperson who has brilliant ideas and has a brilliant product and represents a brilliant service. And so what I'm suggesting is that they have to get out of that "I'm a common salesperson" and start thinking more like a marketer and enter that journey as somebody who is going to provide insight and value and connection, as opposed to somebody who's just showing up to try to sell me something once I've identified that I have a need.
Yeah. When I was growing up, every now and again, there'd be the doorbell would ring and my mother would say, if it's somebody with a suitcase, tell them I'm not home.
Right, so. Right. And then the evangelist, too. You have to watch that one, too.
Suitcase or comic book, run away. let's start chapter one. Listen perceptively. Probably very few of us listen much at all. So why do you start with listening?
Yeah, I start there very intentionally because I think actually listening perceptively has always been a master sales skill. Of course, sitting across the desk from somebody as they talk about their challenges and their needs or their business in general, I think that the salesperson who was really adept at reading body language and at hearing what was not said and being able to kind of redirect back towards, well, is this what you're really saying, or is this what you're saying the problem really is? And I think you have to be fully engaged to listen that way. And I think, unfortunately, people that are not as seasoned in many cases are their mind is rumbling around about what am I going to say next, as opposed to what am I listening to. And I think that that concept translates very much to now the fact that a lot of this listening is digital, that we have so many tools now and so many ways to access people and their networks and understand what's important to them, understand who influences them, understand how we need to surround them. And I think that you know, I actually go as far as saying I think listening is really the new prospecting when it comes to sales folks, and that you could actually use many of the social media tools without ever saying anything and get tremendous benefit just by paying attention to what your customers and your prospects and key people in your industry are doing and saying in social media.
Yeah, and just seeing, you know, if they're on LinkedIn, what groups are they in? Are they commenting on any discussions, things like that? So one of the points here, I want to bring up two individual points, listening to stay informed.
Well, I mean, again, yeah, what you're referring to is I have actually a whole list of things that I think you need to do or reasons that you can plug in listening. And as far as, you know, staying informed, I mean, you can set up some routine. Let's say you call on clients that are in 10 different industries. In some cases, you know your products and services inside and out, but you may not know all of those industries that well. And so setting up, subscribing to blogs from people that write about that industry and for example, and setting up ways for you using tools, all these electronic tools now, like Feedly is a great example. I listen to the book as an RSS reader that allows you to subscribe to lots of blogs and then just have that information kind of sucked into your phone if you want, so that you can routinely scan it. And so really making yourself more informed about, say, a client's industry using some of these tools to make it pretty easy is really just become, I think, a very standard practice now for anybody that wants to get ahead a little bit. It always amazes me. I still get these phone calls from people, sales reps, that will have the unbelievable sense to leave a message that goes something like, I don't really know much about your business, but I'd love to come down there and spend 30 minutes wasting your time. And that may not be the exact words they use, but it just it just blows me away now, because obviously with about 10 or 15 minutes, you could probably know everything I've done in the last 30 days, if not 30 years, in my business. And so to not take advantage of some of these tools to stay informed is just a little bit nuts.
Yeah, and at the end of this particular chapter, you've got an entire list of tools and tips for perceptive listening online. So
I try to. I've really always tried to do that with all of my books. I'm not smart enough to write that theoretical book, and so I have to actually tell people how to actually do some of the things that I talk about in the book. And I do have I have throughout the book several hundred resources and tools that I talk about that can actually help you do some of the things that I describe throughout the book.
Well, that's one of the reasons I like your books. They aren't theoretical. They're practical. They give you stuff you can do right then, in 10 minutes, in 10 days, whenever you need it done. But the stuff's right there for you.
Yep.
So we're going to take our first break. You're listening to Am Tower Off Center on Federal News Radio. My guest is John Jantz. Find John at ducttapemarketing.com. Back after these messages. Welcome back to Am Tower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest today is John Jantz. John's new book is Duct Tape Selling. Other books that John's written are Duct Tape Marketing, The Referral Engine, and The Commitment Engine. These are all must-haves for any business library, particularly for small businesses. So, John, Chapter 2, Connect the Community.
Yeah, so really what I'm suggesting in there, whether you are an independent business owner or an independent sales rep for an organization, is that you need to learn some of these skills that we talked about in the first segment, this listening that we talked about in the first segment, to actually better understand your prospects and customers, and better understand really maybe a market that you are uniquely suited to serve. And so I go through some ways that I think people don't traditionally think about. I think that one of the most telling signs about an organization and their health is to really dive into ways to understand the culture of the organization, what they stand for, what their values are, what they believe. Obviously, companies are putting out so much content today, and so if you're not kind of making a roadmap of all of their email programs, their webinars, their blog, really tapping in or plugging into, or at least using as part of your research, all of that information that companies are putting out. I think you can tell a great deal about what a company stands for, what their challenges might be, how you could actually help them based on some of the things they're putting out there. And then obviously, where are they putting that out there? What are all the touch points? What networks are they involved in? What places online do they participate? What do they do offline? And I think really just creating this pretty simple map of the community aspect that surrounds your prospects and customers is really, to me, a great way for a salesperson or a business to really understand their prospects in a way that allows you to know how to access them, know how to communicate with them, know how to position your products and services in a way that can help them or become a part of their community.
Right, and you really spell it out in the second paragraph. The highest objective of any business is to build a community, and then you remind people that the community is not simply the customers, but employees, suppliers, mentors, advisors, etc. So it's all facets of the community, and if you're in a business that gets any media, you add the media into that mix.
Yeah, and I think it's important for people to understand, too, this idea of community. I think has become even more relevant than it was, maybe 8-10 years ago, because of the ability for people that people now have to share online and to really influence a company's brand in a way that's no longer in our control. And so I think we have to understand, the value of this community is no longer just our customers. It's all the people that actually can be advocates and can influence the market on our behalf.
Exactly. So, and the ability to reach out to people through social networks has made the growth of these communities truly exponential. So
absolutely.
So let's get on to the chapter on leads. You know, I being a marketer in the B2G space, I still get a lot of inquiries. Do you have an email list for? And I'm thinking, are you still thinking of spamming the Western Hemisphere?
Yeah.
So let's talk to me about leads.
Well, I have always contended that really one of the most powerful strategies that a business can develop is a really clear picture of a narrowly defined ideal customer. And I use that emphasis on that word ideal because so many businesses think in terms of, if I'm an accounting firm, then anybody that needs accounting is my prospect. And I think that what that tends to do is lead them to becoming a commodity, to really trying, if you try to appeal to everyone, you can't be very specific about, any aspect of your work or your business. And so if you get very good at saying, this is exactly the type, the demographics of the type of client that we can serve best, or the problem that this client has, or that the industry that this client has, and then really start narrowing all of your messaging and all of your, even your service offerings, to both attracting and serving in a remarkable way that narrowly defined ideal client, you will, a lot of people look at that view of narrowing as saying, oh, that's going to limit my ability to generate revenue. And ironically, what happens is you not only have a greater ability to generate revenue, but a much greater ability to generate profitable revenue by taking that narrow focus.
Well, that and you get recurrent revenue from the same types of, or the same client and the same types of client.
Yeah, and you get better at serving them, actually.
Yeah. So focusing on your niche is a good idea.
Yeah, so I actually go as far in this book as suggesting that salesperson that works for a company, I mean, their company maybe has defined that. Maybe they haven't, but let's hope they've defined at least what market they want to try to serve. And I'm suggesting that I think salespeople, many of who have to generate a lot of their own leads anyway, let's face it, no matter what the company is doing. And what I suggest is that I think that salespeople need to take that same approach and maybe even more narrowly define who they are best suited to connect with and serve and build relationships with.
Yeah, I had a request to connect on LinkedIn a few weeks back from an attorney who apparently had recently graduated from law school and decided to set up their own shop. And I looked at their profile, and their skill set literally read like a course catalog. There wasn't a type of law that they weren't willing to address. And it was a one-person shop. And down at the bottom, yes, we do government contracts too. I'm going, no, you don't.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I think, but I think that's a lot of business. I run into it all the time. I mean, I sometimes kiddingly suggest that a lot of businesses, their target market is anybody they think has money.
Yep. This, the defining the leads leads perfectly, and I'm assuming this was intentional, into the next chapter, though, finding your value proposition.
Well, that's right. The second piece of that really is, okay, now I know who I want to attract or who I work with well or who's ideal. Now how can I position myself as uniquely suited to serve their needs in ways that nobody else in our industry is even considering? And I have used an exercise for years. Once I get businesses to kind of understand this idea that if you're not differentiating, the only thing they're going to use to differentiate you is price. And I think that's what happens quite often. And if you're a listener out there, and the first question that you're getting when somebody contacts you is how much, there's a pretty good chance that you haven't communicated or found, at least, and communicated that thing that makes them say, hey, you've got something nobody else is doing, or you're doing it in a way that nobody else is doing. So, for example, at the beginning of the program, I talked about how I completely repackaged marketing for small business and was able to walk in and say, here's what I'm going to do, here's what it's going to cost. And since nobody else was talking about installing a marketing system, there was no way. I mean, certainly price was an issue. They needed to know how much, and it had to seem reasonable to them, but there was really no way for them to even compare me and the products and services and my value proposition to what anybody else was offering.
Okay. And once again, totally sequential here. Once you've gone through the lead process, building the persona, defining your value proposition, then we build a reputation.
Yep. Now we've got to take that strategy. I mean, to me, that I would actually call that, for most businesses, that's your marketing strategy, that value proposition combined with the ideal customer profile or persona. That's who you're trying to attract and how you're going to attract them. And now it's time to start applying some of the tactics to that strategic approach. And so, so much of, and again, in this book I am writing to the individual salesperson who maybe hasn't even thought about this idea of their own unique brand, personal brand, or reputation. But again, regardless of whether or not you're a salesperson or an individual business owner, this idea of building a reputation based on expertise and of providing value and being seen as influential and authoritative in your industry has become a really significant part of how people are found now. And that's a really, I cite a statistic in the book that from CEB that did a survey of over 2,000 B2B businesses, and 57% of them claim that they made a purchase decision before they ever contacted the company in which they were going to buy from. So if you're a salesperson out there and you're listening to that, or a company at all, and you're listening to that, you know, what that suggests is that people are going out there and doing their own research and drawing their own conclusions based on what they're finding. And if they're not finding us and they're not finding our companies and they're not finding the content that we're producing, there's a good chance we won't even get invited to the dance.
Right, and in the government market, there's a direct correlation here. The bidding process often defines who's going to win in the government market, but the biggest reason companies lose is that the buyers in the agency or the contracting office in the agency doesn't know who they are.
Yeah.
Your ability to change that has, or to alter that has changed dramatically, especially through various social media channels.
Well, I think that's absolutely right. And I know the old game of, and again, it's never probably going to go away, but the old game of just lobbying, which in many cases became just simply relationship building, I think even that to some degree has been diminished. There, the effectiveness of that has been diminished by the fact that those government agencies now have access to so much incredible information that they really can move greatly along the track of finding the companies that they want to actually start doing business with, as opposed to really just waiting for that company that's got the biggest lobbying budget.
Right. So we're going to take our next break. You're listening to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest is John Jantz. Again, you can find John at ducttapemarketing.com. And you can find the book Duct Tape Selling pretty much anywhere books are sold. Back after these messages. Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is John Jantz. John is the founder of Duct Tape Marketing, and you can find him at ducttapemarketing.com. And the book we are discussing shouldn't be on your shelf. It should be on your nightstand or wherever you do most of your reading. Duct Tape Selling, Think Like a Marketer, Sell Like a Superstar. We're up to guide the sales journey. How do you do this?
Well, first I have to comment that I applaud you for saying not on your shelf, too, because you're right. You got to take action on this stuff. It's not enough to just acquire the book or the knowledge or the ideas. You got to take action.
Well, you can't hold it to your head and assume by osmosis things will transpire.
That's right. So, really, I use this metaphor of the journey quite often because I do think that a lot of what we talk about in this book is so because buying has changed so much, and the way people find information, the way people find companies, the way in which they choose to interact with those companies and buy is really a lot like a journey. They go out looking, that takes them here, that takes them there. Then they maybe decide to download an ebook or attend a webinar. Then maybe a sales call happens. And so it's really, there are many, many steps some of which are out of our control anymore because of the everybody's ability to publish and to share information online. And so what I talk about is that, you know, obviously I think for the individual salesperson, that means they have to figure out a way to get involved in that journey at a much earlier point than when maybe their companies in some cases have decided, yes, this lead is hot and is ready for a salesperson. Because in many cases at that point, you are just responding to the RFP or submitting a price, hopefully a lower price. Than everybody else that's been invited, perhaps. And so what I talk about in this journey idea is that there are seven stages: know, like, trust, try, buy, repeat, and refer. And in many cases, in the classical sense, the know, like, trust was always the realm of marketing. That's the message. That's, you know, the initial awareness that's built. That's communicating that you know there is value there. I mean, those were all those stages were kind of in people's journey were always kind of the realm of marketing. And then once somebody got to the stage where they wanted to try and buy and, of course, repeat and refer, that was traditionally the sales realm. And I think a lot of ways those functions still exist today, but they have to really overlap. I believe that the individual salesperson needs to actually go out there and start creating awareness and start building trust before they ever ask for that sale. I mean, I'm sure you... Many people in your listening audience have seen that if they can get involved with a buyer or a potential agency that really hasn't even defined necessarily their specifications or maybe don't even realize some of the challenges that they have yet, and that salesperson or that guide is what I like to call them can actually start helping them define their issues and helping them look at the ways to actually see them. I mean, they essentially get involved in creating the RFP, and in many cases, I think typically we'll find that they are more successful at responding to the RFP if they participated in that process ahead of time.
And it's odd because with the more successful contractors, that process is called business development, and they spend a lot of money and a lot of time on really good business development people to do exactly that. Oftentimes, the smaller companies are simply looking to see if there's any bid out there they should participate in. It's a reactive mode as opposed to the proactive mode.
So. Yeah, and I think that here again is where some of the technology and the ability to connect with people in networks like LinkedIn, I think that's changed the playing field a little bit. It used to only be a money game, I think, in terms of access anyway, and in terms of some of this business development. But now I think the playing field's been leveled a bit.
Yeah, the money game, not always in a bad sense, but a money game just to get into the table.
Yeah,
you
know, that's right.
You need staying power to win in this market. It's a very different kind of market. Let's get into teaching sales, though. I've been doing seminars since 91, so this one really resonated with me.
Yeah. And I think really a lot of successful salespeople and businesses and marketers have really... I think, as you said, realized this for years, and I think now that everybody's talking about content marketing, I think for good or bad, most companies have jumped on this idea, and it doesn't mean they're always doing it effectively. Unfortunately, in some cases, people have just interpreted content marketing as meaning more is better. And really what we're talking about is teaching, and I think that is educating, providing value, and I think that is really the most effective way to attract people. You know, nobody wants to be sold, but we want to learn about things that meet our objectives, things that teach us how to do something we want to do. And ultimately, the companies that I think do that the best are the ones that then get invited to really bid on work or to actually do work. And it's funny because for some people, it's still a bit counterintuitive. To think in terms of, oh, I don't want to give away all my secrets. I don't want to tell them exactly how I do everything because then they won't need me. And I think, of course, as you've probably learned in some of your seminars, there are people who walk away from that and say, great, got all everything I need. I think I'll go out and do it myself. But you also find maybe equally as many and probably better prospects who will come to you and say, you clearly know what you're talking about. You can help us. And I think that's That's the mindset that you have to have. I'll give you an example of that. I always thought that I think this is such a great example of a small business that I worked with that saw this firsthand. It was a photographer, and she her primary business was shooting infants, baby pictures. So families, moms would come in and have her shoot pictures of children, and it was a very competitive market. It was a very, there were, you know, the Targets of the world would do it for $19. And so, you know, she didn't want to be in that business. And so we said, well, what if you created a class that taught young moms how to shoot pictures of their infants, how to get better baby pictures, children pictures on their own. And so she started running these free classes, and lo and behold, all her target audience showed up. They took the classes, and what she was able to teach them, it's a lot more complicated to get a good photo than you think it is. And so on top of her having people that just thought this was great, and they would go out and tell their friends about it, she would get about half the class to actually hire her to take shots of their children. Of course, she charged a premium for that. And so this completely counterintuitive approach of actually teaching something that in one sense could sort of gut what you actually sell really turned into the thing that attracted her ideal client.
Yeah, and you know, just I like the example too, because when you brought up the photography, I'm looking at hundreds of profiles every week on LinkedIn. I do a lot of coaching around LinkedIn, and it's amazing how many pictures up there really need theme music from drinking movies or, you know, horror movies.
You wonder what some people are thinking when they, you know, that they put that up there. That somehow makes them look.
I'm still hip.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Okay, we're
save it for my sake. Yep. I want to jump into to part two before our next segment because this is another area that really resonates with me. Create an expert platform.
Well, if we're going to preach this idea of being an authority and being found as an authority and as an expert, the only way that I know to do that is to make sure that people are seeing you in places where they typically look for information. So, you know, that entire chapter basically implores people to become writers, to think in terms of publishing information on blogs or doing interviews and podcasts, producing videos, say through Google Plus Hangouts, all the things that really have been, I think, increasingly seen as standard fare for marketers. I think now any individual, anybody who wants to build a personal brand today and stand out, you know, has to really commit to creating that platform and building that asset.
Cool. We're going to take our break right now. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio. My guest is John Jantz. John's new book is Duct Tape Selling. Pick it up literally anywhere, online, offline, that anywhere books are sold. Back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Once again, my guest today is John Jantz. John is a four-time author now, the latest book, Duct Tape Selling. You can find Jantz at ducttapemarketing.com. Definitely get the book. Don't just get it, put it on your shelf. Read it. So it's we both love it when you buy our books, but we prefer it when you actually use it. You know, I know people that bought my first book, you know, 10 years ago, and it's still on the shelf. They never looked at it. So, yeah, I've been meaning to get to that, Mark. So, John, let's talk about networks and mining those networks.
Well, I think that we've alluded to it several times in the program. I just think we now have all these incredible tools that make it easier to do some of the things that have always been effective in selling. My father, one of the first pieces of advice, I used to actually go on calls when I was little. I would go on calls with him. I remember him saying, you know, you'd walk into a buyer's office and you know, we didn't, maybe it was new, somebody new you hadn't connected with yet, and you'd look around the walls and say, oh yeah, look at the pictures, there's sports team memorabilia, you know, maybe there's a diploma, and that those were kind of ways that you might actually have some common connection, and you kind of scan, you know, for that information. Well, now we have the ability online to not only get that information, but certainly much more. I mean, we can use some of the networks now to find out, you know, who influences a prospect, who they report to, what they might be talking about in terms of their challenges or their past experiences or their needs. And I think that creating, you know, listening stations and ways to collect that kind of information now just has to be part of the job. It has to be part of, you know, how you would go out there and prospect. But certainly it goes much deeper than that. I think that, you know, one of the challenges in many larger organizations, selling into many larger organizations, is that you may have a great relationship with that buyer and think everything's going just swimmingly, and not realize that there are six or seven other stakeholders in the company, maybe in other departments, that are really have the ability to give the thumbs up or the thumbs down on whether or not the deal's going to happen. And so being able to build kind of these stakeholder maps using even a simple tool like LinkedIn has, I think, really, and then obviously what you do with that information, of course, is what really makes the deal happen. But having access to that kind of information and getting really good at doing research online has now become almost a master skill for salespeople.
Yeah, if you're dealing with a small company and you're connected to people in mid-tier management, they may not have buying power. Yeah. They may not even have that much influence power. So just clicking on their profile, then clicking on their company profile and looking for the COO, CEO, CMO, if there's such a person in their organization, finding out what the food chain is.
Well, and you know, you can also find out that, oh, look, my two biggest competitors are first level contacts with this person. So I know maybe who else is already in there, you know, talking to them. There's just so many great, you know, access points that come through this publicly available data now.
Yep. And that brings up a good point. I don't mean to digress here, but I want to ask your opinion. Is it important to connect with your competitors if indeed you respect them, so you can look for information like that?
I think it is. And I think that there's, you know, it's like everything. Keep your friends closer and your enemies closer. I think there is a little bit of that, and certainly to pay attention to what they're doing. I mean, and there's a good chance they're not doing that and not paying attention, but even setting up alerts. There's a tool I talk about in the book called TalkWalker. You can get a daily email alert that anytime your competitor is mentioned online. So if they put out a new press release or they hire somebody new or somebody leaves, I mean, that you know, those can all be great pieces of information that you need to be tapping into. So I do have a whole list of tools to do competitive research, and I even suggest that you set up a competitive research listening station. And one of those ideas would be that you are connecting with competitors.
Yeah, I connect with the. I don't care if they do what I do. I connect with people I respect, yeah. But I will not connect with anybody that I don't respect.
Right.
So you are known by the company you keep.
Well, and I think that, you know, a lot of people realize too in this, you know, this big world that we live in. You know, they may be a competitor today, and they may buy us tomorrow, or we may buy them, or we may want to go to work there. So, I mean, I think that connecting is always a good thing, as you said, with people you respect.
Right. Change the channel. This chapter resonates with everybody, I hope.
Well, I one of the things that is a kind of a thread that runs through this book, and it's been interesting because I have received messages from people in very large organizations in leadership and marketing and in sales, and saying, you know, their greatest challenge is this divide between sales and marketing. And so what I really suggest in this book is that one of those two, and again, I'm talking probably primarily to the sales manager, should be the one that starts the charge for the cultural change that may have to go on in a lot of organizations, that so that they start thinking in terms of this is the new way that, that sales is done. This is how we need to measure. We need to measure salespeople differently than maybe we did in the past, because we need to we need them to write content. We need them to be connecting. We need them to be building personal brands. And if we're going to do that, we're probably going to have to change some of the ways that the sales department is run and measured, and what their goals are. And I think that in some organizations, this is going to take a real shift. That's going to take cooperation from marketing folks as well, too. Because I you know, when we start talking about salespeople blogging, for example, I hear, you know, the cries of CMOs, you know, all over the world saying we don't want those people writing anything publicly that that you know we can't control, and so obviously the this idea of a building a bridge, you know, between sales and marketing, you know, has to occur if in fact this perfect end-to-end customer journey that I describe in this book is actually going to happen. And the reason I think it's so important is because it's what the customer wants, and I think that a lot of organizations sometimes lose sight of that.
They do. And, you know, like you, I have numerous examples of companies really experiencing exponential growth as a result of sales understanding what marketing has as off the shelf and what they can do custom, and marketing sitting in on sales meetings to really understand what the problems are.
Yeah, I even suggest some strategies. The old fashioned term of ride along. Having somebody in marketing go on a sales call or to, you know, with the sales team or
Bingo.
With the sales member.
Yeah,
it can be completely eye opening.
Feel the pain.
Yeah, yeah, and hear the real words. I think that's the biggest challenge. I mean, so many times you're sitting around in a marketing room and write copywriting buzz and industry jargon. And that's not the way the customers are actually talking or thinking. And no. I think that the better we can understand the things that our customers are saying to themselves, the more equipped we'll be to really connect.
We have time for one more chapter recap, if you will. Rethink hiring.
Yeah, so as maybe people have been listening to this, they might, and if they're a salesperson or they're a sales manager or a business owner hiring salespeople, they might start to get the idea that that some different skill sets maybe are even required than maybe the typical, you know, quota crushing, you know, salesperson of the past. Obviously, we've talked about the processes need to change, the way salespeople are measured need to change, but we maybe need to rethink who we hire as well, because I believe that you know, analytical thinkers, critical thinkers, people that are more aligned with maybe service orientation. You know, we talked about teaching already, so that idea of being passionate about educating, you know, maybe writing has to be considered, the ability for somebody to write or at least to research and be able to find good content to share, and certainly having, more than a familiarity with some of the social tools. And familiarity is not even... it's an interest and a passion for using some of these new practices. I think if you know, your existing sales team is resisting, you know, some of these changes, part of it's because it's not things that as long as they're going to be measured using these new tools, but if it's not tools that they're passionate about using or approaches that they're passionate about using, it probably means that we need to look for kind of a different profile, more of that teacher or that evangelist or that advocate, you know, as opposed to the person that's the hard closer.
Yep. John, once again, it's number one, it's been too long, so we're going to do this again relatively soon, certainly not the 5-year span, maybe the 5-month span this time. Thanks so much for joining me today.
It was my pleasure. My pleasure, and thanks for sharing this information with your community.
You bet. And once again, John Chance, you can find John at ducttapemarketing.com. The book is Duct Tape Selling. Get it and read it. It's a great read and solid info. You've been listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This is not my day job. If you need help in defining your marketing goals, your marketing plans, give me a shout. And if you need any assistance on leveraging LinkedIn, LinkedIn in the business to government market, you know where to find me on LinkedIn. Thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.